We left Noah and his family, recognizing that they had lost innocence because there was nakedness, and yet there was shame with regard to nakedness, remember? Noah got denuded. That's sort of like saying, what do they say instead of dead? That he passed away.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What's the word for making the word nice?
Passed on.
It's a euphemism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got a euphemism for being castrated, denuded. It just sounds like you, you know. Anyway, Genesis 9, verse, what, 22?
Verse what?
I don't know.
No, Genesis 10. We're in Genesis 10. This is the generation of the sons of Noah.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are.
We read
yeah,
we
are,
that.
Actually.
We've gone we there
swear
three or four times.
We've read it, but we haven't studied it, trust me.
He acknowledges we passed that way.
And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without. Now tell me, okay, we've gone through it. You tell me everything that that means spiritually. Nakedness Nakedness has become linked with shame. Unless you have purposely seared your conscience or your consciousness with the belief system that depravity is to be desired. Now, there's a whole generation, there's a whole world of people who for them now, depravity is their security. I don't know if you can understand that.
Sure.
I don't understand why that's the case, but...
Why depravity is their security?
Yeah.
Because it's the shared experience. It becomes a phony sense of belonging or community.
Think about that child that is always with the man who doesn't have a leg, who says we'll work for food. I mean, it's obviously, I mean, I don't know what the deal is with that, but I look at this child and that's, you know, he always has her with him. And what are you telling me about the sandwich episode? Wow. They're outside of a Burger King and somebody giving them a sandwich and he tore into it, and she was crying for him to give her some, and finally he did. But I mean, that's all she knows, and so I can see that really clearly. That to her, that's love. To her, that's father. To her, that's, you know, whatever, normality.
No, but I understand just if you go into a nightclub and you see people, you know, in the party frenzy or whatever, that's their commonality or that's their bread that they're, you know.
Yeah. And it's now manifested in music. Music becomes the definition of the shared depravity. And it's insidious. It's not right or wrong or indifferent, it's just insidious. You understand it? Because you then have a sense of community based on something that is unspeakable. So there is, the only time there is nakedness with no shame is when your conscience is seared with depravity.
Yeah.
Now it's important that you understand this.
And it's totally different. It's like an about face completely from being, you know, open-faced or whatever, not
right.
Ashamed.
Yes, it's the
depravity.
Everything in the act of depravity is secretive. It's whole There's a part of every one of you that desires depravity. Most of you have never experienced it because of, except in your own private world, you've never experienced it because of fear. But trust me, the desire for depravity is simply a perverted desire for fellowship, for community. The difference will be, one is open-faced, one is totally secretive. One is, you commend yourself openly to every man's conscience in the sight of God, no matter whether they're part of the fellowship or not. The other is, it's totally cultic. In fact, the Santeria cults, that where there's drinking of blood. You know about Santeria?
Yeah.
It's the one that killed the Kilroy kid in Matamoros. But Santeria came from probably Haiti, probably Africa. But it's an ancient mixture of Christianity or Catholicism with these ancient animistic cultic religions. But what it does in its most powerful form is it takes someone that is just becoming, where their hormonal imbalance is, where they're leaving childhood and entering adulthood, where there's just the awareness of sexuality in the child's mind. They cause the child to lose their virginity in some bizarre sex act at the moment of initiation while there's drinking of the blood. And it creates, it creates incredible loyalty where they'll do anything. I mean, they'll kill for you, and it creates, an insatiable need for more depravity. Now, the reason I said all this is because the condition that man is in that we're talking about here is naked with shame. Now, the condition, the nakedness for us in this puritanical society, always we associate nakedness with sex. It's almost you don't even have to say the words, it's there. Nakedness has nothing to do with sexuality. Naked has to do with revealing your fallenness. All that your nakedness, and the reason you're ashamed is you're ashamed to admit how depraved you are. If you could get down to the core.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about, the act of confession, that's all the fear of confession is.
Yeah.
So I can see how that would be a trick.
Well,
because it's just a metaphor.
Through the hot seats, all of us have come to a point where we think, on one level, that you've been vulnerable. But on another level, each of you know that there is some part of you that is so secretive, it's so odious, that it can never be revealed. Or if it is revealed, it's revealed in only extraordinary circumstances, with total resentment if it's ever hinted at by someone else. Now the lesson here, from a spiritual standpoint, is Noah lying there naked, allegedly denuded or castrated, by the relatives or the line of Ham and Canaan, and the two brothers, Shem and Japheth, putting a cloak on once, because the first thing that Canaan did, or Ham did, is he came out and told. He elevated himself to tell. It's like, that, you understand? That's what gossip is. This is the first instance of real gossip. It's you have to elevate yourself to tell. Well, instead of that, Ham's response was to tell. Their response was to walk backwards with a cloak and let it fall over their father as an act of respect. Now, what can we learn from this? Let's go back first. Do you understand what I said about depravity? Does anybody disagree with it or doesn't understand it? Huh?
Can you sum it up real quick?
Nakedness becomes linked with shame unless your conscience has been seared so that you believe that you've made depravity your security. Let's go to Romans 5. Go to Romans 5, verse 12. Wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin is not imputed where there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had not sinned after the similitude of Adam's transgression, who is the figure or type of him that was to come. But not as the offense, so also is the free gift. For if through the offense of one many be dead, much more the grace of God and the gift by grace, grace which is by one man, Jesus Christ, hath abounded unto many. Now, Romans 5, traditionally, Luther called it the much more chapter. If you could hear this, Christ has paid the penalty for your sin, for your, not just your sin, but your transgression. Under the law of Leviticus, if you transgress, you have to repay that which is owed, or that which the debt, any transgression causes a debt. Do you understand that? Well, you not only had to pay back the transgression or the debt, but you had a 20% penalty added to it. So that, I mean, it was really bad when you start adding. I mean, we're talking usury of the highest order, because I think it was like compounded weekly.
Whoa.
But when Christ then was the offering for the transgression, he not only was the offering for the transgression, he was the offering for the 20% more. So Luther and the great saints that have studied this called Romans 5 the much more chapter, because it's like, if you have done something, it's paid already, whatever the debt requirement of it was, plus a 20% bonus to you. You understand? Okay. In verse 16, and not as it was by one that sinned, so is the gift. For the judgment was by one to condemnation, but the free gift is of many offenses unto justification. For if by one man's offense death reigned by one, Much more, they which receive abundance of grace and of the gift of righteousness shall reign in life by one, Jesus Christ. Therefore, as by the offense of one judgment came upon all men to condemnation, even so by the righteousness of one, the free gift came upon all men unto justification of life. Now, what he's saying there, in a nutshell, is you will never be able to understand grace until you understand sin. Now, what that means is, and some of you are in this position, you secretly, and sometimes not so secretly, justify yourself. You act as though you want justice. The evidence that you act that way is how you treat your brothers. You act as if you want justice. Well, that's the pure kicker, that you know that you don't know what sin is.
Are you equating depravity with sin?
You don't know, or you've conned yourself into believing that you're a pretty nice person. That's what Miss September said the last time we met, that she used to think she was a pretty nice person. But it was a hustle. Her conscious mind had hustled her. There is a whole universe, a whole world of people whose society, who Molech teaches to hustle themselves to thinking that they're nice people. You understand that? You really understand it? And so he says, if by one the offense came, by you won't understand if by one the gift came until you understand by one the offense came. The classic that I use that I don't think any of you ever understand is, where would you be tonight if your grandfather had died at birth? You are genetically depraved because of the fallenness of your relative. You can call him your father. In spirit, he is. He's the one that was your progenitor. He's the one that brought you forth. You are of your father, the devil. You are the most he is the most depraved of all people. The only thing that keeps him from letting the depravity show to its maximum is society, civilization. You are of your father, that deprived being, and the desires of your father are all you're capable of doing. Do you know that? If you knew that, you could never again complain about your loved one or your brother. You could never again have an argument with your brother or your sister or your wife or your husband. You could never again, as we talked, Tyra and I talked last night, take shots at your brothers. If you knew your depravity. Now, the answer is, you do know it. The world knows it. The world out there is without excuse. Each one of them knows their depravity. Your sweet mothers and your sweet daddies know at the core level that they are evil. They have spent a lifetime putting on makeup to they act like they're okay, they're nice, they're better than others. That's why in the newscast and the newspapers, the number one thing that people read is about the depravity of someone else. In order that they can subconsciously say to themselves, I am better than that person, so I'm okay. But we are they that know that we are deprived, depraved. And that for us, when we're naked, it doesn't have anything to do with the sex acts. It has to do with the fact that we know that we are fallen. So the shame doesn't have to do with sex. The shame has to do with fallenness.
I wonder about, even these tribes out in the bush. I mean, they don't have any reason to wear clothes. And yet, I mean, you know, they'll wear something because, you know, it's like, I mean, occasionally I see them totally naked, but, you know, like the women, they'll be, you know, the top of nothing, but these long skirts or, you know, just some kind of weird
loincloth.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't make sense in a way. You think if they're that free, they might as well just, you know, go the whole way, but they don't.
Well, that's why this, the myth of Margaret Mead. You know about that?
No.
She wrote volumes. Isn't that, isn't her name Mead?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, she, look at the screen, I was saying I didn't know.
She wrote volumes about primitive tribes, in a particular one that was allegedly this sweet people that didn't have the capacity for war and didn't have the capacity for shame. And they were just wonderful, sweet people that hadn't been tainted by civilization.
Just one of the ones that were on the island in the Philippines?
Yeah. And it was all bogus. She influenced a whole generation into believing into the goodness of man, and it was all bogus.
You mean they were really...
They were really just as rotten as you are. But she, as a recognized anthropologist, got that theory into every school book in America. You were taught from the school books based on her research that was bogus.
It's like, one thing that's always like, irritated me is this whole, you know, return to nature or return back to the way things were and then we'll be happy. Yeah. And I always think, well, then why did they leave in the first place? You know, they're so unhappy. How'd we get there?
Yeah. Okay. Verse 19, for as by one man's disobedience many were made sinners, so by the obedience of one shall many be made righteous. Who will be made righteous? Those of us that no longer try to be right. Moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound. Now, that's what's happening right now in your lives. Who in God's name would have thought that taking thought for tomorrow was sin? You've been taught to take thought for tomorrow all your life. Don't be surprised if it's taken you years to have it penetrate your subconscious. Moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound, but where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. Now, that as the sin hath reigned unto death, even so might grace reign through righteousness unto eternal life by Jesus our Lord. That's in us, in a vessel, not someplace else departed from us. So now, I pray that each of you have admitted that you're depraved. I pray that you know that you are fallen. I pray that you know that your only hope is to the acceptance of the cross and the abandonment of yourself. If you don't know that, then the next thing I say to you will be taken as a humanistic statement. Because the next thing I'm going to say to you is, who told you you were naked? Once you've accepted the cross, who told you you were naked? Who told you you needed anything more than what you have at this instant? That's what nakedness is. You need something else to cover you from where you are at this moment. Who told you you were naked? Well, you can say, Ole told me. Well, Ole told you only to get you to pick up the cross, to accept your death. Now who told you you're naked? You understand me? Who told you you were naked?
It's like our minds, I mean, once you get to that place of you know, being repentant or whatever, our minds are the Antichrist, or the evil one. The voices try to get you back into that state of depravity. I mean, they say, well, don't you, you know, aren't you really this shithead? Aren't you really just, you know, don't you remember and you know, shouldn't you think about this? And,
yeah, they try to get you to think about and talk about that which for us is a shame to even speak of. That which is the death. Now, so what? God has got this great deal. I mean, he can have all these wonderful words and all these wonderful philosophies. They don't mean jack shit unless they're tested in a group of people like us. Don't mean anything. So it doesn't mean anything unless someone is sufficiently free to tell you you're naked. If they're not sufficiently free to tell you you're naked, there can be no test. Who told you you were naked? Well, my brother did. Well, listen to another voice. Listen to the voice of God. Your enemies shall be they of your own household. Us. Understand that? Until you can love your enemy.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
You understand that? Otherwise, you depersonalize your enemy. You make him somebody outside, over there. Here, your enemy shall be they of your own household, your own temple, your own Bible study.
Yeah, I have a world of vague enemies.
They're meaningless.
I'm sick of that.
No, you got to personalize the enemies. They're right here.
Why are they?
Because they're the only ones that are free enough to tell you you're naked.
Say shit to you. Like my boss at work, he's probably dying inside, really. But nobody will say anything to him because he's the head guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's wandering around doing all this completely non-real stuff. He's unconnected with reality. And no one, me included, has the guts to connect him up with reality or even try so that he can at least bounce off the wall with you.
Yeah. You got to come to this. That the enemies shall be your enemies shall be they of your own household. Now we used to think, well, that meant my mother and dad or somebody over here who wasn't a believer. No, it doesn't mean that. It means the people that you're laying down your life for. There's no merit in laying down your life for somebody that meets your idolatry. Even the Gentiles do that. Here you have to lay down your life for those who you are connected with for an eternity, and it's impossible for you to run away from. That's where the test is. Here, both things could happen. You can castrate somebody. I've castrated every one of you, spiritually.
I'll agree. Oh, that's really well, because I felt that the other night. I mean, when you remember when you and I were facing off and you pointed out to me, you know, I said, I thought I'd believe, you know, even without it, and it was like,
what did I hear hit before?
Yeah, I mean it was intense, and I thought about that, and I've been confused about it.
Well,
that's right.
Remember, the only kinds of grains that were capable of being for matzah were those that were capable of being leavened. The only kinds of people that are here are those that are capable of being anywhere. The only kinds of, I mean, you understand that it has to be, it's tested love is what God cares about. He didn't give it. Love as love it has only one thing from the spirit standpoint. You want to hear what love is? Let's read what love is.
Let's go to
Corinthians.
You
asked. just listen. This is the definition of love. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could move mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profit me nothing. So now, at that point, you can say, praise God, this romantic love that I feel in my heart. Unless I have that, unless I have my definition of my kind of self-love, okay, we'll put it on a little greeting card and we'll say nice words to each other. Then Paul cuts their legs out from under him with a next. Then he says, love suffers long. Long, long time. Love is kind. Love envieth nothing. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Love does not behave itself unseemly. Love does not seek her own way. Oh my God. I just got crucified. Love is not easily provoked. Love thinketh no evil. God damn it, it got me again. Nothing that I am capable of doing, I've never loved anybody. It gets worse. Love doesn't rejoice in iniquity. Hell, I love it when something bad happens to somebody that I've...
Yeah.
You know?
For several reasons.
You know, if Tilton fell over, you know, he got hit by a train, fell over in the middle of a sermon, I'd love it. So I'm failing all kinds of tests here. Oh, I know, but you wouldn't fail these tests.
Yes, well, we're here to minister to you, brother.
When you were talking about, you know, your enemies and then how it turns to love.
Yeah, well, it does. Let me show you. Love is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Love bears all things. Oh, God, there it goes again. Love.
I'd already said.
Who would like to do the honors? I'm selling.
I'll be more than happy to. What's my job? Please stop.
That would.
Love beareth all things. Now, the next one. Love believeth all things.
I don't believe that.
You're an idiot.
Well, what is that? I mean, what's an example of that? That wouldn't be what you consider the common. I mean, it's like what you people tell you, you don't sit there and go, well, he lied to me? I mean, is that what that...
Yeah.
Love hopeth all things. Love endureth all things. Love never fails. Now, the reason that we get in trouble is we try to separate this love from the person of Jesus Christ. Understand? We try to imitate Jesus. Especially that Thomas A. Kempis idiotic book. That's the stupidest book in the history of the world, and yet it's a classic in Christianity, The Imitation of Christ.
Never heard of it.
Huh?
Never heard of it. But that's really what you're teaching.
What happens is, I don't know, it happens without you having any idea that it happened. All of a sudden, the way love is seen, herein they'll know you're my disciples because of your love one for another. All of a sudden, we go through holy shit around here, but there's not one of us that doubts that the other loves them.
Oh, yeah. Really, man. Well, I'm just seeing the people.
That's the test. It endures. Time is the evidence of love. Everything in this book is about, and everything in you, is a battle to destroy or to mix the seed of Christ. That's the only way you'll ever understand the scriptures. Anything else that it's telling you is telling you a lie. So here we see in this scenario with Ham, another battle going on. That's a picture of what goes on in you and I. Now, how can that be? What is the Antichrist kind of trying to castrate? Well, that's a million things. You can think about them. He's trying to cause the seed of Christ to be without reproductive value. I can see it. I can see this scenario played out 100,000 times since the day I started preaching. Okay, anybody have anything else? Let's call it a night there.